Welcome to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It is I, Len Testa, here with Jim, and we've got an exclusive piece of information here about the Hogwarts Express over at Universal that Jim was able to find out. But before we do that, a real quick housekeeping note. Jim and I are staying as guests in someone's all-star vacation home. It's a fabulous, fabulous alternative to staying at a Disney property. Check them out at allstarvacationhomes.com. Now then, on to the exciting news. So Jim was able to get an exclusive look at the visual effects here behind the Hogwarts Express train. I don't know how he did it, but apparently, and this might be a clue, Jim's corneas are now imprinted with the phrase "Universal Creative Property of." Strangest thing ever, Jim. Was that painful?
Other than the night sweats and the constant bleeding, no.
So we're recording this maybe a little bit ahead of the press release time for this. So we're going to release this as soon as we're able to. But Jim, why don't you tell us what happened? We're talking about the new Hogwarts Express train that connects Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure.
Yeah, and this has been the component of the whole Harry Potter expansion that has most fascinated folks. Because again, the question is, is it a transportation system? Is it a ride? You know what? And more to the point, anybody who's seen the construction so far is the train is, you know, you can see it from inside of Universal Studios Florida, where it's 30 or 40 feet off the ground. You know, I mean, it's the right colors, it's the right look, but it's like, what the hell are these people looking at? I mean, it's just sort of like, welcome to the magical view of our backside of the house, and ooh, look at all of those colorfully themed dumpsters.
And it's like, didn't they take part of Lost Continent, right? And they closed that off, and so that's where this construction is, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, this is just to stress right up front. This is a transportation system and an experience. They have...
it's a grill and a cooler.
There we go. Yeah, okay. That's right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Foreman. on the Islands of Adventure side, they have basically sort of extended the world of Hogsmeade Village a little bit down the hill, just before the Sinbad stunt show.
In the Lost Continent.
Yeah. They built much in the style of the original Hogsmeade Village. We're talking the 1,000-year-old Scottish village that's perpetually in winter. There's this, again, a train station that's been built in the same architecture style, covered with snow. But, you know, conversely, at the other end of the deal.
At the other end of the line.
Other end of the line, we have King's Cross Station, where they did not tell me how they're going to do this, but I got confirmation that you enter King's Cross Station and you walk up. I mean, anybody who's seen the movies or read the book knows this moment where you walk up and there's the brick column, you know, and you stand there and you watch the group that's getting on the train ahead of you hurl themselves at this end. All right. And they disappear. They go through. The Universal has figured out how to pull the effect that it runs through the brick wall. All right. And the great thing is,
you're going
to
run through a brick wall.
Run through a brick wall. Okay. And then, so you now get into the same position. You do that. And again, the choices here are so smart. What they've done is that when you're outside in King's Cross Station, you are in this one color palette. When you come through the illusion for the portal for
you,
the
you run through the brick wall.
You are now on platforms 9 3/4, and what they've done is the color palette is everything is like, you know, again, to use the I'm blanking the musical group,
Jim's making motions with his hand and
long hair. The group, the dial. They turn it up to 11.
Oh, all right. Spinal Tap. I was starting with Doobie Brothers.
That's right. Making
a long. Okay, whatever.
Nigel. I'm sorry. I was doing Nigel. All right. But yeah. Everything, you step into this environment where the reds are redder, the brass is, you know, and you stand there on the platform, and there are the loaded luggage carts, there are the trolleys with the magical creature cages, which they're going to have animatronics in. As you stand there, the Hogwarts Express rolls in, and the steam billows.
That's right, it's a steam engine, right?
So that's
it's,
right.
They kept it. It's an actual steam engine.
So now, again, now comes the moment that the cabin doors open. And again, to stress, anybody else who would do this as a theme park ride, you'd create, you know, just this one massive car with all the seats facing in one direction.
And it's
the
doors sort of like Disney did. Disney did their Wildlife Express train. All the seats face one way.
Yeah, it's
all open seating.
Yeah. And but Universal again, because they're dealing with Jo Rowling, and you know she has one vision for this. It's the cabins from the movie. It's just the doors open and eight people at a time climb at each of these cabins. Now that the language that was used for us was a couple of hundred people per train.
Okay.
All right. So we're thinking 200.
Yeah.
All right. And again, the kind of the other thing to understand about this is that it's not one train; it's two trains. In fact, this is where it gets fascinating: is that as the train is being loaded at King's Cross Station, over in the island side, a similar train is being loaded at the exact same time, and when both trains are loaded, they leave the they both leave their respective train stations. They actually pass one another.
Okay, wait. This sounds like a math problem. Two trains leave.
That's right.
Leave their stations at 12 o'clock.
When am I getting to Poughkeepsie?
Oh. They're traveling at 50 miles
an hour. There we go. All right.
There'll be a quiz at the end of this podcast.
But yeah, but they pass each other. In fact, again, 40 feet in the air out in the parks. And then, but...
it's in the air. So it's an elevated train track.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
And
I thought it was going to just be on the ground. But
no.
It's good. Elevated.
Well, again, that's the other thing is that...
Oh, that's right. It runs on, in the movie, it runs on those the Roman arches, right?
Right, right.
So they're doing the Roman arches.
Well, no. See, the thing is that once you're inside the train, the window... And I don't know how many of you folks remember the iteration of the backstage animation tour at Disney where you'd walk up. This was after they actually finished doing production in the old building, and there were these polarized windows that they would open.
In the costume section. So you go into it, so you were in the tram.
Yeah.
You went into essentially a big building with a cutout for a tram to drive through.
Mm-hmm.
And on the left side was the costuming department.
But the windows would polarize, so...
Yeah, they would go dark,
you know,
like sunglasses.
So what's really cool about the Hogwarts Express is that you'll be able to look. You're in your cabin. The eight of you are, you know, the cabin door locks. You look out the train window. You see the station. And as you pull out of the station, the window is now polarized, and you have a 6-minute long film that recreates iconic moments from all the Harry Potter movies. And the interesting thing is, talking with Mark Woodbury about this, the head of Universal Creative, they went. They combed through all of the books. They watched all the movies backwards and forwards, and they were looking. Yeah, again, they were looking for every moment in the books and in the movies where the kids had been on the train, and what had they seen? You know.
Okay.
So I mean, take for example, on the version when you're going from King's Cross Station to Hogsmeade Village, you look out the window, and at one point, Hagrid, the gamekeeper of the Harry Potter books, flies by on his flying motorcycle. And then midway to there, you know, this swarm of Dementors comes down on the train.
Sure.
And, you know, we got shown mostly footage from the Hogsmeade to King's Cross Station.
So you've seen the effects.
Yeah. And they are, this is part of the story that Universal really isn't ready to talk about yet. I actually asked them, and they were like, let's just open it, then we'll talk about this. This is... It's 2 6-minute long effect shots. And anybody who knows anything about filmmaking, when you watch a movie, typically effect shot is, you know, 10 seconds, 15 seconds,
yeah.
And you cut away to something
else. It establishes a mood quickly and then, like, go. Yeah.
This is a you're looking at the window and you move from London to the British countryside to the Scottish Highlands. So, and, you know,
it's a continuous...
Continuous shot.
So it's like the beginning of Gravity, where it's like they've...
That's exactly.
At the very beginning of it, you're like, you're above the earth and everyone's getting
vertigo. Yeah.
6 minutes, though, that's...
Yeah, and they had the interesting thing is they had to invent stuff that you hadn't seen in the movie. Like, what does Hogwarts Castle... If you're coming around the Black Lake, when do you first see Hogwarts Castle? When do you first see Hogsmeade? You know, and what does it look like from a distance? And, you know, and all of these choices...
There's probably landscaping choices they have to figure out.
Absolutely. And... We got to see... and actually, you know, this is clearly made by people who love the Harry Potter movies. I mean, for example, when you get on the train at Hogsmeade to go back to King's Cross Station, as the steam comes up and, you know, the window starts to run the movie, the first thing you see is Hagrid. He's there, just like at the end of Sorcerer's Stone, to see you off. It's like he's walking alongside the train waving, and you now roll into the Scottish countryside. And you go along the Black Lake, and as you're going along the Black Lake, who flies into the shot but Buckbeak the Hippogriff, who skims the lake. And then you go into the forest, and here's, you know, suddenly it's Fred and George Weasley who are on their brooms and hassling the train and setting off a fireworks display. And then, best of all, when you finally roll into London and you're just about to pull into King's Cross Station, you look out, and here's the night bus, which, you know, has collapsed itself into an alleyway and then hurls itself out into traffic and just zooms off into the night. And everything is executed at an astonishing level of detail. I mean, you know, and the whole notion is, in fact, I was talking with, again, Mark Woodbury about this. And, you know, the Venn diagram of Harry Potter fans and train enthusiasts who are just going to stay on this thing all day.
Oh, and look at all the detail on the train. Yeah, sure. Because it's a period, it's a Victorian era train, right?
Well, actually, this is what's fun about it, is it's actually a train. The Universal Creative Team, in order to get the details right, they went over to the UK for roughly a month and rode the rail system to get the sense of what a train's movement of this era is like.
So they went to like the train museum and said, "I need to borrow this this locomotive and this car."
But then it gets crazier. I mean, it's one of these things where it's like they're looking at the fabric of the seats, the pillows.
I've been on the New York subway. I've seen people do that 100 times, Jim. That's not unusual.
But they chase down the company that fabricated the pillows. And it's like, you know, we need those pillows for this train. And
it's some 80-year-old guy in Tottenham.
I just happen to have that roll of fabric. So the bolts, all of this craziness. In fact, the thing they're honestly proudest of is they found the guy who built the whistle for the train that was used in the movie. And in fact,
it's like working for the mob. This guy's sitting at home one day, one Sunday afternoon. Yeah. All of a sudden, you know, knock on the door. It's three guys from California in suits.
Yeah. Give us the whistle.
Excuse me, sir. I need some plans.
And actually, what's so much fun about this is that as much as the Harry Potter fans are excited about this, the Universal folks, the people who've been the employees who've been watching this thing be built, are almost as anxious to get into it as they are. And so they were testing. The whistle's now on property. They were testing, because again, when the train leaves, you know, it's like one's going to blow the whistle from one end, one's going to blow the other, and then they begin to go. Yeah. And it's like, so they're testing it backstage, and the employees are like, you know, whipping their heads around, like, oh my god, the train! This is the train ring.
I need some sick time. Yeah. Run. Yeah.
So the real irony of this is that. This is a transportation system that is a ride, and the vision here of the two park one story, you know, with your narrative connective tissue at being a train, which, you know, if you've seen the books, you've seen the movies, it's like the things you see or the things you love about these, you're going to see out the window.
That's me. So do you think that Universal Creative was under any pressure to make the Hogwarts Express experience so compelling that it sells the two park one day ticket?
Well,
was that sort of like the underlying current, you think?
Yeah, that's, and in fact, they were they when they changed out their ticketing media late last year, mm-hmm. and that's when they actually introduced the phrase park to park ticket. You know, because again, the part of this thing is you cannot get on the Hogwarts Express. If you bought for the day at Universal, you know, Studios.
If you bought a one-park ticket, you're not going to get on the train.
And, you know, and they're actually, that's the other thing about the downside of what's going on right now.
Good.
They haven't quite figured out how to break it to people. I mean, again, you know, somebody gets in line, somebody gets to, you know, the platform 9 3/4. You know, how are we checking the tickets? You know, how are we, you know, there's got to be a point where, you know, prove, you know.
I think, you know what they should do? Wristbands. RFID wristbands.
Oh, yeah.
That's a joke. There you go. they'll find out some way to do it.
But the other aspect of this, and they were very, very straightforward about this when I was talking with them, that they know 200 people per train, you know, and so two trains departing at the same time, so 400 people.
Yeah, 6-minute experience, right? So we were thinking roughly a 10-minute. If you take 2 minutes to load it, 6 minutes to ride it, 2 minutes to unload it.
But here's the thing. They are just... Because, again, this isn't a theme park-friendly train. This is a recreation of the Harry Potter train. And it's like, how long is it going to take to put 8 people in a cabin?
Wheelchairs, right?
Yeah.
But 2 minutes is a pretty decent load time. It depends on how many... They're probably going to have to staff it with cast members.
Yeah.
Here's the interesting thing, Jim. Yeah. So let's say they hit 400 people every 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's 2,400 people an hour.
Yeah.
A park-to-park ticket is roughly $20 more than a single day, a single park ticket, right? Okay. At that rate, if they can keep the train busy with 2,400 people, that's $500,000 a day in extra revenue.
Wow.
Or almost $180 million a year in extra revenue from a train.
So, and yet you couldn't do the train leave, two trains leave at the same time.
Before, the 6 minute. Well, I needed some paper, actually. I worked that out.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but clearly, I mean, there's a huge incentive for Universal to do two things. One, figure out that park-to-park efficiency thing. But two, make this the experience that people go home and talk about. Because, you know, regardless of what happens with Diagon Alley, which is going to be fabulous, we've talked about that on a previous show.
Yeah.
But if they can get people to buy the ticket, essentially it's a $20 train ticket, right? $500,000 a day. That's a huge incentive.
Dear Lord. But that said, there's another thing that kind of concerned me about what Nancy and I learned on Monday this week. And when you... In fact, it has to do with the Hogwarts Express in relation to Diagon Alley. All right?
Oh, okay.
All right. If you are going to... I mean, for example, if you go into Diagon Alley and you do what they want you to do, you replicate Harry's journey. You walk up the street, you buy your quills, you buy your robe, you buy your magical creature. It's now time to ride the train. You actually have to exit Diagon Alley. I mean, you physically go out through... You know, and in fact, you know, you don't get to go out the way you came in. You can't go through the back wall.
It's a one-way thing. That's a crowd control thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All right. But now you have to go outside Blunder Facade and go over to King's Cross Station and get online there. And then, conversely, if you've come over from Hogsmeade Station and you want to go to Diagon Alley, you have to exit King's Cross Station, go out by the London Facades, and then go in through the Leaky Broomstick. So you get that. I mean, Rowling was very insistent. Everybody has to enter as Harry entered. The wall comes apart and you get that beauty shot of... Yeah. So, you know, that's the thing. Operationally, it's like, wow, you know.
So you got to go. So walk me through this. So you're in Hogsmeade,
right?
Village. You want to go to the. You want to get on the train.
Yep.
How do you? What's the walking path?
Well, you come down the hill. You're in Hogsmeade Village. You go to the new train station
where the Lost Continent is right now, towards Sinbad.
Okay. And you board. And again, that you have the wonderful looking out the window. You get this wonderful 6 minute long film element. But then you arrive at King's Cross Station.
Okay.
You then have to egg. And again, they were very clear about the coming through the brick wall, you know, experience. Didn't get a whole lot of information of the transition from platform 9 3/4 to King's Cross Station to the London Facade. You've got to assume...
Yeah, so it's got to be themed, right? They're not gonna. It's not like they're going to make you walk out to San Francisco.
That's exactly
right. Okay, so it's still all going to be...
Yeah.
Okay, but they were light on the details on that.
Yeah, but then you exit there. You have to go out to the London Facade. And we were actually talking about this the other day about where are they going to, you know, if you remember that first summer of Hogsmeade Village and Hogwarts Castle.
The nine-hour line to get into the theme park.
And, you know, the notion of they had to invent things like handing people tickets, like come back at 2 o'clock, that sort of thing. It's one thing when you have a giant lake to line people up around like they do over at Islands.
That's right. Where are they going to put these people that wait? Where are they going to put a 9-hour line inside the park?
Right between King's Cross Station and Disaster, the start of the San Francisco area, there is what appears to be a fairly large outdoor area where they can line people up.
Oh, so this is something they made?
Yeah.
There's new construction.
Creative space. You know, it's... again, when we did the construction walkthrough last month or thereabouts, Nancy and I mean, they took us in through there, and you could clearly see between the two buildings they were, you know, this space of about 30 or 40 feet where, you know, they could throw up the stanchions, and this would be, you know, but again,
But it would go from all the way from the back of the park by Fear Factor all the way down.
Well, no, that's actually the you know, this is just one whole area. You know, that in fact
that's a pretty far distance from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think that's the other thing we were talking about, the notion of, I think, at least for the first summer, they're probably going to make use of the Fear Factor area to hold people. Likewise,
the stadium.
Yeah. You know, that they're going to line some people up on the bridge that links, the Simpsons ride and Men in Black over to
Diagonal. It's a great bridge, actually. It's got a really great visual of, you know, if you look one way, you've got the Simpsons. If you look the other way, you've got, especially at night, the Men in Black.
Absolutely.
But so they're going to use the Fear Factor Stadium, the bridge, and then all the way down to San Francisco, the disaster area. That's a lot of people.
And not only
the Earth will start to sink from the weight of these people. Florida. You never know.
This is true. This is true. I don't know. That's one of the reasons why. And again, I hate to keep hammering this point home. I know there are a lot of people who are anxious to come here and see this, all right? Yeah. But again, to reiterate the story, I've been told multiple times at this point, when I just assumed initially they were going to follow the pattern that had happened with Hogsmeade and Hogwarts Castle, that, you know, that they'd have it open, soft opening the late May, early June, and then open, you know, I think they opened the original one June 20th, or there were 21st.
Yeah, middle of June, so in time for the summer season.
Yeah. And in this time, when, you know, I actually floated the language and said, okay, so, you know, soft opening late summer, or late spring, early summer, and then, you know, open summer. And they were like, no. We open in summer. They're just beginning to sound like, because of all of the operational issues here,
and they're going to make it seamless.
Yeah, they want the opportunity. I mean, we could be talking as late as July, perhaps even August.
It's still technically summer. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. That's the funny thing of, I'm forgetting the name of the longtime art director at Universal, but he was the one who sort of leaned in during this conversation. And remember, when you work for Universal, summer means November.
Yes.
You know, which, you know,
it's almost summer in the Southern Hemisphere.
There we go.
You know, I hate for us to be, you know, hemispheriocentric and say that the Northern Hemisphere is the one whose calendars we should use, right?
Yeah. So that's reading between the lines there. These are people who are still feel a little burned by what happened with Rip Ride Rocket. You know, that was originally supposed to open Memorial Day, I want to say, of 2008, 2009, and there were capacity concerns coupled with the fact that the onboard audio, it turns out that there were, I want to say, 39 or 40 songs that they had the rights to, to people programmed to write on the attraction, but some very clever person had actually programmed an additional 960 sort of secret songs.
That's something you might notice, but okay.
Yeah, and that if you knew the code, I mean, for example, you could tap in the code and write it to the Rainbow Connection from the Muppets, which Universal had not licensed. And so that became a whole bugaboo when that got out ahead of the actual opening of the attraction. So
Universal's kind of in a pickle here because they can't give an opening date, which means people can't plan their vacations.
Yeah.
How is that going to affect their financial projections for the? Or do they just think, look, the day that we announce this, you know, we're going to staff the phone lines like it's the Jerry Lewis telethon and just, you know, take as many people will come down for it.
Let me put it this way, that one of the things we got from this very last trip, the trip before coming down to Universal, is got talking with folks who are familiar with the financials. And the original business plan for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, the Hogsmeade, was that, okay, we put, you know, roughly $200, $250 million in the ground to do this thing.
Yeah.
And realistically, we will get $50 million per year. We'll recover all of our costs within, you know, 5 years.
Okay, and that's a not risky investment. That's okay. There's some risk in there for 5 years, right? Because you're assuming that, you know, the thing is going to be popular for 5 years. Generally, big companies like to see something a little bit shorter in terms of a horizon. But okay, 5 years. Okay, anyway, so what happened?
Okay, well, the thing they hadn't taken into account is that Butterbeer would become a phenomenon, that people would line up
Butterbeer
for hours. And again,
the butterscotch version of crack.
That's right.
Sure.
They recovered the entire amount in 4 months.
$250 million.
In four months.
4 months on the back of Butterbeer.
Well, on the back of Butterbeer, and coupled with the fact that, again, the nine-hour lines and, you know, 5,000 people.
The funny thing about that was the crowds essentially generated more crowds because people looked at that and said, my God, this must be the thing. You know, this has got to be the theme park thing to do. And people came down in droves.
So that the attitude, and it's kind of a fascinating thing. It's like, look, we want to get this right. We want to have, you know,
same buzz all over again.
Yeah. So we want people, you know, we know people want to get into it today. In fact, they're anticipating a second surge of Potter Watch. You know, the notion of that there will be people who stand in the park who will sign up to stand outside the gate, and the notion that when it's open, everyone, come to the park.
The bat signal will go up. But
they would rather get it right and it's just ironic that we live in this instant gratification culture. And it's like, I'm sorry, and I know you're all on Twitter and on Facebook and just when's it open? It's like, it'll open when it's ready, and sometime
that's
this summer.
That's admirable, actually.
You have to eat your vegetables first. You know, it's like, you know.
We're going to do this right. That's good.
So again, I apologize for those of you who are looking information about when to come, when to plan your vacation, just summer, you know.
One quick question about the effects, and speaking of summer. So it gets darker later during summer. Mm-hmm. How is the effect going to work, did Universal explain how the effect is going to work both in the Florida midday sun and then, let's say, in December when it gets dark at 5 o'clock and the park's up until 8? How are they managing the video technology so that it works both, in bright sunlight and then in dark?
Again, not as much, not as giving on the details of that, but the notion, and in fact, kind of floated the thing about, is there a daytime version? Is there a nighttime version?
And it's just did they say?
It's like, it's England. It's murky. You know?
Okay.
You know, it's one of these things where it's like, oh, it's gray and overcast. It could be night, could be day. Who knows? You know, so that there's a very dark pallor.
I've been on a train in England in the mist. I totally get that.
So, but yeah, the footage we were shown, and we were basically shown in somebody's office on a laptop, mm-hmm. The notion is it's basically they're looking to replicate sort of the quality you'd get from a really good flat screen. So, you know, the notion of...
And you're sitting a few feet away from the screen.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're just sort of leaning out from your seat watching this go by. And the other thing they weren't as forthcoming about, but there will be live special effects in the cabin. You know,
oh, really?
Well, you know, for example, when the Dementors attack, it'll get that little bit colder.
Nice.
You know, and you'll get a crackling ice effect or that sort of thing. I mean, again, there's some smart plays here. So, but yeah, I mean, and the other aspect of, because again, when you have George and Fred flying by you outside, they're talking to you. I mean, there's some dialogue. So there'll be, there's great audio inside the, your train cabin. So you're not only getting the train sounds and the rocking feeling, but you're also getting to hear the dialogue of these characters going by. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it looks like they've thought of everything. It's sort of interesting to say.
They have. But again, just the question of how much time is it going to take to get right? And then
how long are the lines going to be to get on this thing? So 2,400 people an hour is pretty decent, actually. Somewhere between Space Mountain and Pirates of the Caribbean in terms of capacity. But it's going to be way more popular than that.
But there's a level of concern about when people come. I mean, face it, we live in this age where everybody's armed with a cell phone. And, you know, how delayed is the boarding process going to be by, I have to get the selfie of me with the Hogwarts in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm going to just, there's, you know, there are...
There'll be a selfie platform at the Chase Cross. Look, if you want a picture of yourself in the train, over here, kids.
So, I don't know. And the other thing, I think that Universal is being very smart about it, is they're breadcrumbing all of this. Like, this is what Diagon Alley is, and oh, this is what the train is, and someday soon we're going to do the same thing about the food for, the Leaky Cauldron.
Yeah,
where
they can do food, they can do entertainment.
Yeah,
they can do tons of
so stuff. More stories to come, guys.
Excellent. Jim, thanks very much for this sneak peek. We'll have more as our corporate overlords tell us. But really looking forward to this. Thanks for your time.
All right.
All right, for Jim, this is Len. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. Please go on to iTunes and rate our podcast and let us know what you'd like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care, guys.